The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
A web of intrigue this week as Howard's way is the only way at the Emirates and Jose's is no way to treat Arsene. We'll look back at all of that tongue-twisting action and ahead to two huge Champions League games and two slightly smaller ones. We'll briefly patronise the rest of the FA Cup by giving it a token 2 minutes, go Steel City Derby, and we'll talk about the madness of Felix Magath and what he'll bring to Fulham. Green tea, medicine balls and relegation most probably. Add to all of that a chance to quiz a Brazilian about how much is going to go wrong at the World Cup, and we have the perfect show. Well, nearly perfect. There is one thing missing. This is Football Weekly. And just to get rid of the elephant in the room, I'm going to try it in five words. He's not here. He's skiing. And as for the second elephant, three words for him. He's skiing too. So you're stuck with me, Dave Farrar, just for the week while James and Max enjoy their Winter Olympic fantasies. And we echo those here. So I'm joined in the studio by our version of slopestyle. James Horncastle. Could just see him in bandana and toting a customised board. Yo, James.
Yo, Dave.
Nicely done. Fernando Duarte somehow reminds me of Alberto Tomba in his pomp, all wild-eyed and full of intent, carrying off that up-all-night, don't-mess-with-me look to perfection. Hola, Fernando.
Hola. I must say I'm thrilled to be compared to a double Olympic champion, you know. And I must say that after Tomba retired, everything went a bit downhill.
Oh, Lord. And that leaves Barry Glendening, who ain't for teasing on this subject, as he is a bona fide skeleton expert. Now, how are you doing, Barry? Have you calmed down yet from Lizzie Yarnold?
Why, what did she do to me?
You famously did a skeleton run and she won the gold, didn't she? I mean, I'm taking no interest in it whatsoever, but I read it in the paper, it must be true.
Yeah, she did. I was lucky enough to chat to her a couple of weeks ago before she became an Olympic champion, so I made her what she is today. She was very impressive.
She won't talk to you now, you know that, she's famous.
Nah, well, I knew her when she was nothing.
There you go. I'm going to start with you anyway. Let's get the Suarez, Oxlade-Chamberlain stuff out of the way, shall we, from Arsenal against Liverpool. What did you make of all that? Were you as outraged as everyone else about the penalty not given?
I wasn't outraged, but because it didn't make any difference to my day, but I can understand why Liverpool fans were outraged. It should have been a penalty. Howard Webb did not have one of his better games. He's had quite a few shockers this season, and he didn't give the penalty to Suarez for the barrage by Oxlade-Chamberlain. He probably could have given Steven Gerrard a red card towards the end, and he let Lucas Podolski off what should have been a obvious booking. So, but the thing with Suarez is you can always go back and point to the fact that he has a lot of form for trying to con referees. So when decisions he should get don't get go his way, it's kind of difficult to feel sympathy for him.
And well done for giving that answer without saying the boy who cried wolf. James, you got something to say?
Well, I just thought of the instance where Suarez has perhaps thrown himself down. This was, he wasn't particularly histrionic in the way he went down, was it? I thought it was quite a blatant check by Oxlade-Chamberlain. And, it was clear-sighted from Howard Webb. I think perhaps heard on the side of caution, he'd already given Liverpool a penalty. And perhaps thought, why not? Let's not do it again.
Fernando, being Brazilian, you'd know a thing or two about inept refereeing. So, what was your take on the whole thing?
There's an unwritten law of the game anywhere that you don't give two penalties like that. So Suarez got a reputation, of course. I think Webb had a bit of a howl of a game. But, and I'll say it again, but sometimes you got to win the game and you got to beat the referee too. It's like Chelsea in 2009 with the whole of Rebel thing, and when they were like, absolutely done. I got no doubt of that. But, they also, missed a few very precious chances, just like Liverpool yesterday. So at the end of the day, you don't bury your chances. You're actually exposed to this kind of thing. And by no way I'm actually acquitting Mr. Howard Webb of being, again, outraged. I hate him. I mean, because I think he's a horrendous referee. Walks around like, Mr. Truncheon and etc. And again, he showed his ineptitude yesterday.
There you go. He could put it on a business card. Walks about like he's Mr. Truncheon. There's Howard Webb in a nutshell. And what about Arsenal, though, psychologically? I mean, we're not going to go on and on about the game. It's been done to death pretty much everywhere. But how much does that affect the game against Bayern? The machine is in town, James.
Yeah, but the origin of Arsenal's resurgence probably started at the Allianz Arena back in, was it March, when they surprised a lot of people and won 2-0. That was when Andre Villas-Boas kind of famously said after they'd lost the North London Derby before that they were in a downward spiral, and you know, they've been on an upward trajectory ever since. So, you know, I think they'll back themselves to get some kind of a result against Bayern. I think, you know, Wenger gambled a little bit in resting so many players ahead of the game, and it paid off.
Yeah, it's a ludicrous Bayern Munich team, though, in terms of their quality, isn't it? You're a sort of gambling man, aren't you, Barry? And you kindly plugged my book last time I was on this show, which someone on Twitter told me they bought as a result of my appearance. So it's still available in one or two remaindered shops. And I'll give you your 10% later. But Bayern are a certainty, aren't they?
You would think so. I mean, it's good for Arsenal that Frank Ribery and Jordan Shaqiri are out for the first leg, at least.
And why is Frank Ribery out?
Because he's injured his buttock.
Correct, yes. I just wanted to hear you say buttock, yes.
Okay.
Carry on.
No, I believe he had an operation on a blood clot or something. Anyway, so yeah, he's definitely going to miss the first leg, but then Thomas Muller will come in for Ribery, and Schweinsteiger replaced Shaqiri at the weekend when he had to hobble off. So, you know, they've got a lot of strength and depth. If I was having a bet on who would get through to the next round, my money would certainly be on Bayern Munich.
I mean, the remarkable thing on Saturday, I think it was, they played Freiburg, they beat them 4-0, and Pep Guardiola made them train immediately after that game because it wasn't much of a test for them. And Bayern's president, I think Uli Hoeneß, has said that their most competitive match that Bayern have had this season is their first 11 against their second string in training. So I think, yeah, that goes to show the kind of strength and depth they've got.
Arrogance, though, might undo them. That's the thing, you know. That it's kind of it's something that Pep needs to control. The problem with Bayern is that they're getting so good that they're getting much more arrogant than they usually are. And this kind of thing, if I was Wenger, I would pick up the interview translated, obviously, then put in large letters with little pictures so the players can understand. And so, hey, look, they're already kind of like saying that you guys are dead rubber, etc. That would be fantastic for like motivation to speak.
But I guess the Arsenal tie last season, that yes, they beat them at the Emirates, they dominated them 3-1, but then they almost threw it away at the Allianz Arena. I think that'll be a cautionary tale which they'll probably learn from. So I'm a bit with you, Dave. I think this could be Bayern's, to be honest.
Just look at their bench, right? Thomas Müller, perhaps one of the best players at the game at the moment for the last, 3 to 4 years. And I don't mind about, you know, not very inspired spells. This player is one of the most intelligent footballers I've ever seen. This guy's not getting regular games. And remember how he undone Barcelona last year. Dante once told me that in the famous first goal against Barcelona in the 4-0 win, that he just flicked the ball because, you know, Thomas would be there. They know that he creeps up everywhere. He's a very dangerous player, and I hope he shows it, because I really don't understand why this guy's not getting more games.
Yeah, the bench doesn't play, though. So, you know, it's just because you have a strong squad doesn't mean you're going to win a specific game, I guess. But, you know, point taken about that one. We should move on to Manchester City. They've got a fairly big Champions League test as well. But, James, what did you make of the win over Chelsea? I mean, Pellegrini tried to say afterwards that it wasn't psychologically important and so on because we weren't scared of them anyway, but it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought, and what was really impressive was Chelsea didn't have much of a sniff. They didn't really create anything. And it was, okay, the midfield setup was different to when they played them, 12 days before, which I think everyone identified the fact that Martin Demichelis played in midfield with Yaya Toure and that didn't work out. I thought Javi Garcia was a lot better in that position. It allowed Yaya to be Yaya. I thought he was excellent. And it's great to see someone like Stefan Jovetic start producing for Manchester City, because I think he's a really useful player. You know, he can play as a number 9, he can play as a number 10, he can play across the forward line. I thought their movement was excellent. And just to go back to Yaya, I thought the way he dominated Matic, someone who was outstanding in that first game, a fortnight ago, was really good.
And the tricks that Jovetic has picked up in Serie A, were you proud of his dive as a fellow Serie A fan? It was brilliant, wasn't it? Wonderful.
It was, yeah. I thought that he was looking for it and, you know, full marks to him. You know, I'd give him a 10. He should be on Splash.
Yeah. Again, I thought you might say that. Barry, what did you make of all of that? City, Chelsea? We'll talk about the fake mind games in a moment as well, which is avoiding a little... Yeah, I'm as bored as you are of it. Barry's pulling a face there. But, yeah, strong performance from City. Hope ahead of Barcelona and all that?
Yeah, I think they will see off Barcelona over the two legs. It is a full strength Barcelona that's coming to City. They're missing Fernandinho and Aguero, but again, they've plenty of strength and depth. And it's a testament to their massive bank balance and reserves at just, you know, that you can do without those players quite pretty easily, to be honest. It's not a massive loss for them. Yeah, their win over Chelsea was a lot more convincing than Arsenal's was over Liverpool, I thought. And they'd be full of confidence. I'm really looking forward to this game. I can't wait.
Fernandinho could be back, and that's, in my opinion, fundamental for City. That partnership, Yaya and Fernandinho, my most successful namesake, it's fundamental. He told me once that they kind of understand each other already, almost like telepathically. They knew the time to hold back and the time to kind of like bomb forward, because they're both kind of like very box-to-box in a way. So I think City, especially against Barcelona, City are going to need them there. Even if Fernandinho's not 100%, you know, et cetera, after the injury.
So you've got City going through, which I'd sort of let you get away with, but you're confident of that, are you, over two legs?
Yeah.
Yeah? And what about you, James?
No, I think Barca were outstanding at the weekend. They put six past Rayo Vallecano. Okay, it's Rayo Vallecano, but Messi was excellent. Alexis, I think, has been really good this season. He scored, I think, his 15th goal. Neymar came back from injury and got a goal himself. And I just think, if you look at that City's performance against Bayern Munich at the Etihad earlier in the Champions League group stages, I thought Pellegrini was a little bit naive. He played 4-4-2 against a 4-3-3, so he had, two in midfield against three. They didn't have control of the game. Bayern were able to outpass them, outpress them. I think Barca could follow that template and make it difficult for them. I think it'll be quite a high-scoring game, to be honest.
But apart from Celtic, Barcelona didn't have a very convincing European performance this season so far. Apart from the game against Celtic, the 6-0.
Sure.
They didn't show anything, okay, this is... Even last season, you know that they're already kind of like almost on cruise control. If there's a team that can basically scare them at least and pretty much knock them off the rails a bit, it's City. And I think there's never a better moment to play Barcelona than now, where even with Messi, okay, recovering, etc., you get a chance that they are vulnerable. They are kind of like not treading water because it'll be a bit too strong, but they are there for the taking, in my humble opinion.
Is Pellegrini, though, and I still don't think we know the answer to this, a very, very good coach of an overachieving, slightly smaller club, but yet to be proven as the coach of a big club that ought to be winning things?
He guided Madrid to more than 100 points in La Liga and still didn't get the title. A lot of people are saying, oh yeah, but is Madrid... Okay, what was that last time Madrid won the European Cup, for example? So would you call everybody... Even José Mourinho underachieved at Real Madrid. Of course, it's a massive gig for him. City, obviously, the Arabs are pumping a lot of money into the club, and they only got like a couple of cups to... And a league title to actually, show for that. So it is a tough gig. But I think from what I've spoken to some of his players before, and they all say that this is a guy who seems to understand a lot about the game and about how footballers think. So it seems to me that the guys love playing for him. They love his philosophy to football, the way he kind of like addresses the players. Apparently he never shouts at them. So, not getting a hair dry is something that some people might actually say that's nice.
And plus, he's a proven track record. I think he's won 9 trophies already as a manager. So, and he will win stuff with City, no question.
Oh, in terms of, I don't like broad brushstrokes and sort of talking about countries in this way, but hey, we're going to go with it. Is he a particularly sort of Chilean kind of person, Pellegrini? And from a South American perspective, I mean, people would talk about Brazilians as being like you, very passionate and so on. But he's very reserved, isn't he?
These guys are like Italians when we call them in South America, because they have this kind of like European manners. Most Argentine managers are like this, and I think Pellegrini looks much more Argentine than Chilean. I remember the Orlando Aravena, this crazy Chilean manager that once put the police to kick the Brazilian players in a South American qualifier. Now he's very different, but also on the touchline, you see that he's much more reserved. He's not a classic Latin manager, if you want me to say so. But I remember Menotti, for example, being like that kind of like imposing figure. It's almost like he's Argentine, although Chile is also known for Italian immigration. So,
and continuing with the broad brushstrokes thing, is Gerardo Martino a classic Argentine manager, do you think?
Yes, he is, because of the way he thinks of the game and the way he behaves. But he's a very different character from all these other guys. He's stayed with his small club for ages. He played for all his life for Rosario. So he's a great guy. He's getting a very difficult gig. But if there is a kind of manager that seems to be able to thrive in European football, it's the Argentine. Because most of the time, these guys are going to go for leagues where they have a lot more cultural background, in case the Spanish thing or the Italian thing. And also, they seem to be less isolated. Brazilians, when they go manage abroad, they start losing with the language problem. You know, Brazil is the only country in Latin America without Spanish as their first language. But I also think the mentality is much more important. I think the Argentines, they are more, okay, more serious. They're a bit less victimized when things go wrong. I mean, the history, the track record of Brazilian managers abroad is quite feeble. And you see a lot of Argentines, even in the Premiership now. And, you know, look at the Southampton guy. I mean, the way that he doesn't speak the language, that doesn't make him flinch. And he's doing well with what he's got.
Well, we're going to have much more generalizing about countries to come in part two of Football Weekly, in which we'll learn that Germans are organized, the Swiss tend to be neutral, and it's cold in Iceland. But that's it for part one. Well, we continue here on Football Week. Sorry, Fernando just told us something really disturbing, and now he's taking his sweater off. There's a long way to go. This could still go wrong, but
Fernando's dressed like Rupert the Bear today.
I think Lee Trevino, but you're going Rupert the Bear. Yeah. If you can imagine a cross between Rupert the Bear and Lee Trevino, maybe a natty tartan cap, and it would be Lee Trevino over Rupert the Bear, but I can see what you mean. But it's good. It's stylish. Is this what we got to look forward to in Brazil at the World Cup, by the way? This kind of everyday elegance, Fernando?
Impossible because of the weather, but people try, especially people who come to England. It's really funny. I know Brazilians who spent 2 months in England, and all of a sudden you call their mobiles and, oh, hello, you've called Jose, please leave a message. They're trying to impersonate British accents. It's really funny. So, you know, you can see some elegance, not in Rio, because in Rio everybody dresses as if the sea was just, you know, two feet ahead. But São Paulo is more interesting, although I don't think that English people are that elegant sometimes, you know. I think the Italians are much more, but hey, it's just me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And if you want to go with Pimp on his day off, that's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine by me. I think it works. No problem with that.
This is called Prince of Wales, Jack. So I'm being kind of like supporting to one of the biggest institutions in your country. So,
fantastic. Yeah. There you go. I've got nothing to answer with that. And I'm certainly not including the words Pimp and the Prince of Wales in the same sentence. Oh, no. James, let's look ahead to the other Champions League games. Please restore some sanity. Okay. What about Milan against Atletico? A few little issues for Milan, injuries and suspensions, aren't there?
Yeah, perhaps. I think Zapata, the centre-back, who has actually come into some form of late, will not make it. They're sweating on the fitness of Kaká. And also they've got Montolivo and Muntari suspended. And Milan haven't been all that convincing under Clarence Seedorf since he took over. They have got results, but haven't really got performances. And I think that was the case on Friday night when they beat Bologna, and it was a late Balotelli screamer. And that was it. I don't think there's a lot of confidence going into this game against Atletico. Seedorf went to see them play. I think it was the day that Aragonés died or whatever, and they produced an outstanding performance. They then lost three games in a row, but they won again on Saturday, and they got the job done really early. So it was a perfect situation for Diego Simeone. And because they're such an intense team, this Atleti team, I don't think Milan will be able to live with them. I really don't think they will.
But Clarence Seedorf, however, one of the few people in the world with a deeper voice than you. So there's something he's got going for him. And Barry, you're buzzing about both of these games, actually, aren't you? The Milan-Atleti game and Leverkusen-PSG. But start with Milan-Atleti.
Well, just an interesting stat I dug up this morning. Milan's record in Spain over the last 10 years is absolutely atrocious. They've played 10, won 1, drawn 2, lost 7. And of those 7, the aggregate score is 19-3.
Now, the famous implosion in La Coruña, no?
Yeah, against Depor. I think the one win was it against Real Madrid? Was it Pato?
I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess that stat will perhaps be skewed by the number of times they've been drawn with Barca in recent years.
Don't skew my stat. It's all I have. Stop trying to make it look rubbish.
Barry brought in a stat. James raised it. What can Fernando do about what do you think about Milan? There's a Brazilian interest in all of this, of course.
I would love to see for Rio what's this whole thing of Kaká basically, you know, coming back to life. He was excluded from the last Brazilian friendly. He wasn't called up for Brazil and South Africa in March, which pretty much spells perhaps an end for his pretensions to actually go to the World Cup. But I would love to see if the player is still there, because I think he's an interesting guy to have around. Even if he goes as a squad member, he's a guy who has been to a World Cup, actually three of them. So he knows things, and this Brazilian group is really young. Having said that, he needs to be fit. And the problem is, last time I saw him playing live, you could see there was something missing. The knee injury has taken that vertical explosion he had, the ability to actually receive the ball and just dart forward. He now has to drop back a bit more and play a bit more laterally. I don't think he's found himself yet in this new life. He has to reinvent himself quickly if he wants to go to the World Cup. And I agree with James. I think Atletico will go to Milan as if they hadn't eaten for 2 weeks, and there's a plate of meat in front of them. They're going to go like rabid dogs and 10 million apart. They're going to be a proper Simeone team. They're going to be dogged.
Yeah, no, Kaká, by the way, I sat on a bus with Kaká once. Without question, the most handsome man I've ever been in the company of in real life. Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I've not met DiCaprio, but, you know. Bayer Leverkusen against PSG. Save me, James.
What, from that game?
No, from the route I was metaphorically taking.
I think Bayer Leverkusen have... it's been difficult for them of late. They were knocked out of the German Cup by Kaiserslautern, second division Kaiserslautern, in midweek, and they lost to Schalke on Saturday with Sami Hyypiä making the curious decision not to play Sidney Sam, one of his best players, because he's going to Schalke next season. PSG, incidentally, I think they had probably their most convincing performance of 2014 so far. They eviscerated Valencia 3-0 on Friday night, so they had a day extra rest as well. And I think they've been really impressive in the Champions League so far this season. In fact, for the last year, I know they lost their last group stage game, but they'd already qualified and they sent out a second string against Benfica. But whenever they've had to come and play, they've done really well. So I expect them to go through and win in Leverkusen.
Yeah, Leverkusen have lost 4 in 6 now, haven't they? Yeah. And what's your key stat for this one, Barry?
I don't really have one.
No?
Yeah, I just know that Bayer Leverkusen are missing two strikers, Cruz and Dirdiok, which I wouldn't have given them much of a chance at all, but with those two out, I can't see anything other than a PSG win.
Do you think PSG could win the damn thing, the whole thing? I mean, there are several people that are sort of starting to believe they might.
I think it's a draw, right? Depends on the draw. They gave Barcelona scare last season, and that was pretty impressive.
And with Zlatan around, anything's possible, isn't it?
Scored 32 goals this season already. I think he's second top scorer behind Ronaldo in the Champions League with 8. So he's having an outstanding season even by his standards.
Barry, producer Ben's just told me that you've got a thing about French teams bottling it. Do you describe? I mean, I would not necessarily to describe PSG as a French team.
Yeah, I have in the past made. Sweeping stereotypes about the French having no bottle and more often than not being proved correct, but I don't think you can bracket PSG in that, because they've just got so much money, it's not really a concern for them.
Bottling team plus Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the guy who disappears in big matches, I mean, with rare exceptions.
I'm really disappointed.
It's like
you.
The Euro Foundation.
You of all people. There's ultimate. That's one of the top three European football cliches, and you've just come out with it. That Zlatan doesn't play well in big games. Those days are gone, my friend.
Five big games he's played well.
We don't have time.
We're Classicos,
but he's got to.
Derby della Madonnina.
No. Games outside Italy. Come on. Champions League stuff, and the stuff is getting bam. Or even Sweden, apart from the Portugal game, and again, Ronaldo pretty much drowns him. You know, I'm not saying he's a bad player. I would love to have him at the team I support, which everybody knows who it is. But, you know, he's a guy who sometimes tends to misfire. He's known for that. And there's stats to prove that. You know, it doesn't say he's not an outstanding player. It's almost like you're talking about God, Zico, right? At the World Cup times, at crunch times, he actually didn't deliver. And
do you know what I'd love? I'd love to see you say that to his face. And you wouldn't. Bottle for it.
I would back Duarte to do that, actually. I reckon Duarte would do it.
And what do you think would happen next?
I don't know. What would you do, Fernando?
No, I would never tell this way, because this is banter, is different. But okay. I would definitely quote the stat to him, as I have before. He got angry before. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that Zlatan should just take the criticism and not get angry with that. But, you know, There is a valid point when people demand some more appearances in at crucial times. He's an outstanding guy, and I hope he proves me wrong. You know, just like Thierry Henry did in the World Cup when I said they never scored against big teams, and then, bam, he sent Brazil packing in 2006.
Let's just, James, you're a well-connected guy. Careful how I say that with your love of Italian football, but you're a well... Can we set this up? A sit-down face-to-face between Duarte and Ibrahimovic. What do you think? Max Kellerman from HBO, we could probably get him in one of those boxing face-to-faces. And I want you to say to his face, as Barry says, you are overrated. You don't perform in big games. And your hair's rubbish.
It's on record.
And you've got a big nose.
It's on tape that I didn't say he was overrated at all. I'll say that there is a problem with sometimes disappearing on big matches.
Which martial art would you use?
Me?
Mm.
The gun.
Oh.
have you seen my size? You know, the only way I could headbutt him was actually hit him in the ball. So that the only way, because you know the guy's huge. But no, it's a gun. I mean, I don't fight. If I have to get into a fight, it's to defend my life. So I would use a gun.
I'm currently in my head fast forwarding 3 months. Welcome to Rio. Hello, nice to see you, Fernando. Fantastic. I think we should move on to the FA Cup. I did say we're going to patronise it briefly for a couple of minutes. Are you excited by the prospect of a Sheffield derby in the quarterfinal, James?
Yeah, kind of.
Sound it.
No, I think obviously it means a lot to the city.
The city of Sheffield.
And also... it's good to see a kind of tie like that so late in the at this stage in the competition. I think Sheffield United are the lowest ranked team in the Football League to have got this far since 1990. I think
that's correct.
Which is remarkable. And obviously the team talk that Clough gave at half time was based around the fact that the prospect that they could be playing Wednesday and they came back from behind. So I am looking forward to it.
It's kind of disrespectful to Charlton that everyone's already looking forward to the Steel City derby when they still have to play Sheffield Wednesday. They are away in that tie, and they're struggling in the Championship, whereas Wednesday have sort of had a resurgence since I wrote that they were doomed in their wake of their match against Macclesfield. Sheffield United had 25,000 at their game against Forest, which is a remarkable attendance when you consider like the number of empty seats at the Stadium of Light for the Sunderland-Southampton game, not having a go at Sunderland fans because they've a League Cup final to save up for, and you know the game was on TV and it was an early kickoff. But I think there was less than 15,000 at that. So... anyway.
And what do we make of this whole, again, it's an issue that's been done today, so we won't spend ages on it, but the whole picking your third team for the FA Cup thing. Southampton had a chance, didn't they, of getting to the final? I mean, they had a big chance, and Swansea too, to an extent. I know they've got the league to worry about, but he picked people who haven't played in months.
Well, because these guys are more worried about surviving the Premiership.
But not Southampton, though.
But they're in no danger of relegation. It was an extraordinary decision, but...
But there's also the thing of finishing well, getting more money. I mean, it's a whole paycheck at the end, you know.
You don't get any money for winning the FA Cup.
I think the Premiership, a better position in the Premiership is better than the prize money in the FA Cup. Correct me if I'm wrong, but...
Well, if that's the way managers are prioritising things, and I doubt it is was his motivation. I don't know what his motivation was at the end. We reached a sorry state... And I mean, it's kind of disrespectful as well to the Southampton fans who, you know, it's over 1,000-kilometre round trip from Southampton to Sunderland. The game was at 12:45. So for those who made the effort to go there to see this
ragbag
11 put out,
Terrible planning by the FA as well to make that the early kickoff.
Exactly. If the FA wants this competition to be good, start playing better. And... as I said thousands of times before, give a Champions League spot to the winner. Simple. Then you make a fantastic cup thing. It's going to be fantastic. It's one of the few things in South America that seems to work better in Europe. If you win the Brazilian Cup in Brazil, you get a Libertadores spot. So you actually take the competition seriously. Oh, yes, but the fourth place in the Premiership. You're fourth place. You should be rewarded for mediocrity. You know, third is all right. At least it's a podium. Fourth place, no. Give that spot to the FA Cup. And then, boom, you can get people taking more seriously. Of course, the big clubs will dominate, but still. it's much more interesting. Can you imagine, you know, Portsmouth could have played Champions League football. I mean, it's amazing. And don't get me wrong, the story, well, because the fourth spot benefits the better, you know, player, you know, rewards a better planning. So what? Rewards you for being fourth? So, you know, at least you give a title. Hey, your supporters celebrate. You have a reason for an open bus to operate. Because these days the FA Cup is a Mickey Mouse tournament because of the clubs and because of the FA, unfortunately.
Well, and allowing it to be subsumed into the Champions League in the way you're suggesting doesn't make it any more Mickey Mouse. Because that's what you'd be doing. You're effectively legitimizing this old, this fantastic old tournament by saying, hey, there's a place in this other tournament for you which is far more important to you. And plus, how's it good if Portsmouth get in the Champions League?
It's amazing.
Or Wigan
because,
get in the Champions because League. Don't it would last about 4 weeks.
Cool, but they have to be bought by a consortium of rich cheikhs to actually have a shot at this competition.
I also think if there was a Champions League place up for grabs for the FA Cup winners, then the chances of a team like Wigan ever winning it again are nil.
Mm. Which is a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, you want to see teams like Wigan.
So what do you want? You want a serious competition? Do you want a competition that sometimes a team is going to win because the other teams didn't care?
I'd like people to want to win the competition. It might be naive because they want to win the competition. And I think if we keep going down a route of letting every single competition being driven towards one main competition, we're in trouble, I tell you.
Well, but these days you have teams that are not even worried about winning the Premier League. They say, okay, let's make third or fourth. We're fine with that. So, if you know, the demotion of perspective is happening everywhere, unfortunately. And, you know.
Well, I'd have no great objection to the teams that wins the FA Cup getting the Champions League place. Well, I can see merit in them getting it. I can see merit in them not getting it. So I'm going to sit firmly on the fence. Let someone else sort it out.
Winners of the Europa League get automatic entry to the next series of Splash.
We forgot that the Irish are supposed to be neutral to you. See, Barry just sat on the fence.
I mean, you look at Swansea.
The Switzerland of the Isles here. Okay.
Swansea win the League Cup, getting to the Europa League, and then they rest. They make 8 changes to play in the FA Cup because they're playing in the Europa League, didn't they?
Exactly. It's the whole thing's a weird, self-defeating, ever-decreasing circle, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Part 3 to come. Well, before we get part 3 underway, firstly, we're going to have a random drug test at the end of the show in case any of you are any of you three worried about that?
No.
No eyes on anyone in particular?
No.
He said looking at Fernando Duarte.
Exactly. No eyes about that. And secondly, I've got a statement to make from The Guardian. It's just been handed to me. It says, we here at Football Weekly officially believe that the FA Cup is the greatest club competition in the world. So there you go. That's the party line, as it were. And who am I to disagree?
While we're taking care of housekeeping, word on the street is, Dave Ferrer, that you once competed on 15-1, yes. Disgraced yourself, and wore a ridiculous jumper.
You'd be wrong about that. I did once compete on 15-1. I didn't win. I wore a ridiculous waistcoat, not a ridiculous jumper. And I didn't go out in the first round. I went out in the second round. Okay. What quiz shows have you ever been on?
What did you?
Hang on, Fernando. Hang on. What quiz shows have you? I'm asking you. What quiz shows have you ever been on?
I've never been on a quiz show.
Okay. If you'd won Only Connect, you could have a pop at me for going on 15-1. If you'd done the gold run on Blockbusters, you could have a pop at me for going on 15-1. But you sit there in your non-quiz show high horse. I'm sorry. And I know that it was Jonathan Wilson or Jonathan Wilkinson, as someone on Twitter referred to him who told you all this. Was that right?
Yes, it was. Yeah, he told us to quiz you about it.
Yeah, well,
I did. Quiz show shame.
I did tweet a picture of me in the ridiculous waistcoat, so I'll do it again.
What was the theme you answered about?
I had 4 questions. I got 3 of them wrong. The one I got right was which snooker-based quiz show is hosted by Jim Davidson on BBC One. And I got one about Kings and Queens wrong, and I can't remember the other's one. I'll tell you, I can tell. Do you want one of the questions?
Go on.
This is great. Great podcasting, isn't it? The first question I got from William G. Stewart was the Henry Draper catalogues. Are a catalogue of what?
Drapes?
No.
Paint?
Henry? No.
No.
Clothes?
No. I said tools because of Draper's Tools, which was a sponsor, I think, of possibly Sheffield Wednesday at the time. But anyone, any guesses? The stars, astronomy. So that was my first question. That was one light gone, and I was on, I was on the back foot from then on.
That was tough, yeah.
This is really exciting stuff, isn't it? My producer's also just told me that he started his radio career working with Henry Kelly. Go for gold, absolutely. But let's move on to Fulham, seamless as ever. But Barry, what on earth is going on, do you think? Do they know? Does anyone know?
Well, apparently Felix McGath has been put in charge. I would imagine the players are terrified. 3 of them have played for him before and have probably warned the others that they can look forward to being... He's like that guy in Dodgeball, the coach that throws spanners at his players and heavy-duty work tools, other heavy-duty... Medicine balls, training ground runs in the woods. He's apparently once... I heard Rafa talking about him on the radio. He once erected... a giant staircase like you'd see at the end of an MGM musical on the training ground. The players just had to run up and down it repeatedly. He sends them on training ground runs, and then they came back to found he'd emptied all their water bottles so they couldn't drink anything. He's managed several clubs in Germany. He's kind of a relegation specialist, but usually leaves because the players go into revolt and they throw big parties when he leaves. So he may well keep Fulham up, but... I would say dressing room morale will not be too high, and Dimitar Berbatov must be just laughing up his sleeve now as he sits on the back of his yacht in Monte Carlo Bay, sipping on his a big glass of champagne or whatever.
I mean, James, you know quite a lot about Magat, don't you? You know, yes, they might have appointed a taskmaster and fans want players to work harder and so on and so forth, but he's a borderline lunatic, isn't he? I mean, they've taken a massive risk with Magat.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
Who has had success, we should say, but has also had failure too.
Yeah, I think I mean, as Barry was saying, he's in the do-or-die, backs-against-the-wall kind of situation. Yeah, he's often got his best results. I think he saved, I think, Eintracht Frankfurt when they were 8 points adrift or something like that. But, you know, he at the end of the day, he can't... it's not long before tensions sort of flare. People get sick of him. I mean, Lewis Holtby, who'd worked under him at Schalke, I think when he was asked about Louis van Gaal, the prospect of him coming in, he says, well, I've survived Magat. I can maybe survive van Gaal. Well, you know, he's going to have to survive Magat again at Fulham. So it is curious, though, because, I mean, this whole managerial sort of succession planning that they have at Fulham, where, you know, they have Yol, they bring in Mullenstein to work on his staff, and then they bring in Kerbishley and Wilkins. I thought, you know, one of Kerbs or Wilkins would have got the job, but no.
Yeah. Do you see them staying with all of this? Do you see Kerbishley and Wilkins staying?
I feel really sorry for Kerbs, because I think he must have thought, I've got the job.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think everyone thought it was going to be another of those, as you say, weird sort of succession things.
Well, Molenstein is still at the club. But nobody knows in what capacity. I don't know, is he just polishing the cones or whatever? But he's expected he'll reach a settlement in the next few days and leave, because he couldn't conceivably imagine that he'll remain on the coaching staff.
Fulham are overdue a relegation. They escaped several. I think that it might be like the final nail in the coffin, because I don't know if Magath's methods are going to work at that place. You know, it's much easier if you got a more Teutonic base squad, and I don't think that's the case of Fulham.
But many people have made a valid point. I mean, it's not an original point that, you know, he's mega on fitness. Yeah. Player fitness, nothing wrong with that. But at this point in the season, that's almost irrelevant. Yeah,
he's not going to have a pre-season to drill these players.
They might be fit with four games to go, but they could be down by then, you know?
Yeah, and also in terms of the appointments that they've made so far this season, you know, from Yol to Molenstein, yeah, they're two people who you associate with, you know, Dutch football, playing it in a certain way. Now, I know this appointment is made on the basis of the circumstances they're in. They're in a relegation dogfight. They need someone to turn it around. But... I mean, what, 12 games to go? It's not a big window of time for him to do things. And you know, I think at Schalke, things didn't work out, not because they were in a relegation, but they aspired to much more. And I think he had certain controls over transfers, and certain deals were done which I think shareholders thought weren't in the interests of the club, and he ended up getting it. So, again, you have to question what Fulham are getting involved with as well in that sense. So... It's an interesting decision.
Yeah. He won two doubles with Bayern Munich as well in his first two seasons there, and got the bullet early in the third season. And Uli Hoeneß, who you'd think would have been sort of grateful for his contribution, described him as a sadistic control freak. That's a club where he did very well.
One of his nicknames is Saddam. So
tasteful, nice, yeah. Very good. Well, one thing about Molenstein, just to say finally, 16 days at Angie, 75 at Fulham, two multi-million pound payoffs for 91 day's work. As Barry's already pointed out, he'll have plenty of time to go away and polish his cone. So he'll we'll probably see him at some point in the future. A quick word about Wayne Rooney as well. Madness, insanity. Oh, okay, what are they earning now? It's not like the old days.
I think it's a sordid plan.
A sordid plan.
Let's go back to 2002 when he scores a fantastic goal. I think Moyes, you know what, kid? You're not going to be here for long. So I'll tell you something. I'm going to sell you to United. And then back there, I'm going to, you know, give you the best deal. There must be an evil plan because, you know, this contract, these figures he's getting now should be given to him like years ago. Now when he's approaching 30 and when he's actually not lived up to the potential he was expected at United. I don't know. I find it really weird. And again, it gives me the impression that United don't know what they're doing. Unless they have a sordid evil plan happening in the background. Or also, Paul Stetson, he can't be fired because he just cut his deal. But I think David Moyes pretty much worked amazingly for Wayne Rooney. Because if that's the way he managed to keep the player at the club, it's amazing. Should be applauded for that. I'm not suggesting anything dirty. I'm just thinking that, wow.
Do you think it's fair to say he hasn't achieved his potential at United?
I don't think he has achieved his potential anywhere, to be honest. Although he's an amazing player. But, you know, for the grounds he was supposed to reach, he's been overshadowed by players all along. I'm not saying he's not a fantastic guy to have around, but...
Well, I'd argue, and I could be wrong, that that's because he's more prepared to sacrifice his own individual performances for the good of the team.
And for 300 grand a week.
And for 300 grand a week, whereas, you know, other players such as Cristiano Ronaldo, who has overshadowed him, are not that obliging.
Yeah, and also I think on the flip side of that, he's never really been considered a Galactico, has he? You know, someone like Ronaldo, someone like Bale, even has been considered to have that sort of X factor, that wow factor, and have gone to Real. Whereas I think, you know, Rooney, I think the problem for United would have been that if they'd let his contract run down. Probably the only place he was going to go was a rival in Chelsea, you know, a direct rival. I don't think there would have been maybe as interest from Real or interest from even someone like PSG. And you can make the case that from their perspective, it's cheaper to actually time down to this huge contract than it is to let him go for either nothing or for a small fee, and then have to buy someone for a huge fee and commit a huge amount of wages to them. So in that sense, it makes some sense. And also, you know, it's a statement intent in that they can keep one of their best players. You've got to hand it to Rooney because United are in a weak moment of weakness, aren't they? So, yeah, I mean, he's going into his contract talks at the best possible time, really.
And what about this weird, he's going to have an influence on other things at the club that you were talking about, James, earlier, that he's sort of not quite a director of football role, but he'd have an input on transfers or something?
He'd be consulted on targets and that sort of thing, but I think that's what most sort of leading players at clubs would get a say into, wouldn't you? I think I'm pretty sure a manager.
Well, some clubs
would
I don't think they would, but I mean, I know what you mean. I'm sure that senior players are called.
Sounds like a bit of a sop, really. We'll consult.
Yeah, you don't expect Barcelona, for example, to sign people without actually just, you know, just asking Xavi, for example, what do you think, kid? And so some kind of, so you don't bring some new saint to a closed church, you know what I'm saying? And it's natural. I just think it's too much money, to be honest, you know. I mean, not too much money for footballers, but if it backfires, it's going to look horrendous at United in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder if they could have called this bluff. You know, you've just said that you're not sure PSG would have been knocking the door down. Chelsea, yeah, arguably, Mourinho likes him, doesn't he? But could they have called this bluff? A little bit on the money?
I just think they know that Chelsea would have taken him.
Yeah, but if it weren't for Chelsea, it would have been interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for Mourinho being so public, I mean, remember after the 0-0 at Old Trafford, which was, I think, just before the end of the summer transfer window, was it? And he said, you know, the player has a decision to make. So, I mean, it was clear that there was interest, obviously, just from Chelsea there. But I also, I mean, who's going to pay that? I mean, they are protecting their investment, but it's a little bit like Nani. They tie Nani down to a 4.5-year, new contract, and no one can sign him because he's too expensive. He earns too much, and people can't afford his wages. So I think that would be this very similar case with Rooney.
Yeah, expect plenty of phone-ins about how the world's gone mad and blah, blah, blah. But I'm sure there have already been loads. Fernando, we can't have you here, and not we are sort of running out of time, but not talk about the World Cup. Is it? We had the riots, didn't we, in Curitiba. Is it going to be as much of a shambles as people are suggesting?
No, I think when the time the tournament comes, things are going to be in place in terms of actually massive security apparatus. I don't think the authorities are going to be caught on the back foot like they were in the Confederations Cup. But don't expect the total absence of protests. And I think it's democratic that people have the right to go on the streets. I'm much more worried about the stadium, the Curitiba stadium, not getting ready in time. There were a couple of tweets yesterday. A Spanish guy in Spain, influential media commentator, overhearing that FIFA will exclude Curitiba from the World Cup. And I think this could be an interesting idea, although it's a bit too late for that. And I've spoken to a FIFA bigwig during the World Cup draw and said, listen, it's too late. We have to. We can't just say, okay, people, you bought tickets for this thing. We can just exclude the World Cup. Yeah. So it will be there. So let's see how much of an improvisation it will be. It's a shame because Brazil had 7 years to do it. But in my opinion, the biggest problem is the fact that the legacy of the World Cup for the people, which would mean like bigger airports, better roads, better transportation, this is pretty much delayed. I think almost 70% of the urban mobility work is actually not on time and perhaps won't be ready. And that's the shame because the stadiums are going to be there. I went to the Confederations Cup. They're brilliant arenas. You know, you might sometimes struggle at in places like Cuiabá and then with the urban infrastructure, but the football experience was amazing. And it's just like a very big missed opportunity.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like that. I mean, by the way, I totally respect that it wasn't the protest I was talking about. The right of people to use that window on their country to protest, I think, is absolutely fine. That's not what I meant by shambles. But the narrative of these events tends to be, doesn't it? I mean, Athens Olympics would be a good example that, oh, it's going to be a nightmare. It's not going to be ready. It's not going to be ready. It's going to be taken off them. And then suddenly it's fantastic. Do you think that's what's going to happen in Brazil? And I hope it is. I'm not being negative, but I'm interested to get your perspective.
In terms of atmosphere, it will be. But of course, the Confederations Cup showed problems. I mean, when Uruguay couldn't find a place to train, they were caught in traffic for the first 2 or 3 days and they couldn't practice properly. Spain were complaining also about the conditions of their training ground. It won't be like a vintage European World Cup. I think if you compare Brazil to Germany 2006, it's going to be like a drubbing. Even South Africa will look a bit better, but I think this is the cost of actually taking the World Cup back to a place where it's fundamental in football history, and also to take it away from the Europe club. If in 4 years down the line, Russia's horrendous too, we have to actually reevaluate things. But I don't think it'll be a nightmare. The experience will compensate for the problems, and nobody's gonna have to sit on a wooden bench or sit on nails or anything like that. There will be problems with traffic, etc. But then they happen everywhere.
Well, anyway, if Brazil's not good and then Russia goes wrong, at least the next World Cup's going to be fantastic after that, isn't it? So we've all got that to look forward to. And just finally from you two as well, are you worried about it, James, the World Cup? Does it bother you? Are you going, by the way?
Yeah, I'm going to Sao Paulo, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about it just because these things tend to come together, don't
they? Yeah, it's funny how we rely on that, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, but like I say, that's the narrative of how these stories turn out. But okay, and Barry?
I'd be of the same opinion. These things do tend to come together. I feel sorry for the people of Brazil who seem to be getting shafted left, right and centre. But, you know, if you dance with the devil in this case being FIFA, that's the price you pay.
It's not the people, it's the government. And the government has to be lambasted by that. They promise kind of like public and private money into the thing and they're not delivering. The people, they're not feeling kind of like offended by that. They're actually offended by the government being stupid. Just one quick thing. Manaus, where England are going to play against Italy, don't have crocodiles on the streets. Don't have like drug-fueled crazy gang members running and, you know, chopping heads of people. But the FanFest is going to be at the Black River Beach, a fantastic place. So if you going to the England fans going to the World Cup, or Italy fans going to the World Cup and ticketless, go to their fan zone. It's going to be amazing. But the mosquitoes are huge. So, you know, there's always a downside.
Well, fitting that the final word should go to Fernando, I think, today. Thanks very much indeed for your time and indeed your trousers, Fernando. Great to see you.
And, thank you very much.
Thanks for sitting next to him, Barry. Much appreciated. And we'll see you on Thursday, I know. And James, great to see you as well. And enjoy another Milan implosion in the Champions League, which it's going to happen. Do you think that they'll flatter to deceive for 10 minutes, maybe score and lose 5-1 on aggregate? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's odd because Milan do reserve their best performances for the Champions League, but I think this one is beyond them.
Yeah, it's got to be, hasn't it? Well, anyway, great to have James Horncastle, Barry Glendening and Fernando Duarte as well. And for Amide Farrett, don't worry, one more show on Thursday from me, then he's back. But thanks for being kind and patient, as I hope you will be. And from Football Weekly, it's goodbye.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code Guardian.